Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9, tonight with just me, Alan Smales. On tonight's program, I'll be playing an interview I recorded in Hong Kong 3 weeks ago with Chung To, the founder and chairperson of the Chi Heng Foundation. Chung To is a fascinating individual. Born in Hong Kong, educated and then worked in the US, then later returning to Hong Kong to take up a senior banking position. He'll tell the background to him founding the Chi Heng Foundation, which now provides living and educational expenses and support for children in China affected by the AIDS crisis, particularly in the poorer areas of that huge country. So I've got another interesting chat coming up on Orange Ribbon tonight, so stay tuned for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Andy Lau from his current Love Hope album. You're listening to Orange Ribbon tonight with just me, Alan Smales, but with Aline pushing the buttons here tonight. During my most recent return to Hong Kong, I arranged to meet up with and to record a chat with Chung To, the founder and chairperson of the Chi Heng Foundation. Chi Heng means wisdom in action. So on that Monday afternoon, just over 3 weeks ago, with my well-used Octopus smart card at hand, I caught the MTR underground metro across from Jordan on the Kowloon side, where I was staying, to the small but very busy office of the foundation. It's located in Sheung Wan on Hong Kong Island, which is just a few minutes' walk from the hustle and bustle and towering skyscrapers of Hong Kong Central that you see in all the tourist posters. Founded in 1998, the Chi Heng Foundation is a charity registered and based in Hong Kong with offices in Hainan, Anhui, Beijing, Shanghai and Guangzhou. It is an non-government organisation whose programs are funded by private donors, business and partner NGOs. And the founder, Chung To, is a quietly spoken yet very dedicated and driven man who has committed the past 10 years of his life to raising funds and providing support to more than 8,000 children in mainland China. These are children who have been affected directly by the AIDS crisis, particularly in the poorer rural areas. Children who have lost one or both parents, children who have lost siblings, and children who they themselves were born with and are living with HIV and AIDS. Chung To was born in Hong Kong, but at the age of 15, his family moved to San Francisco in the United States. This was in the early 1980s, just when the AIDS crisis was beginning to emerge. It also coincided with Chung's exploration of his own sexuality. So I started out by asking Chung why the family made that move to San Francisco back in the early 1980s.
Well, at that time, my father has a lot of relatives in the U.S., and it was mainly for family reunion reason. And, I also have been wanting to continue my study in the U.S., so it was a good time.
Now, you moved to the U.S. when you were about 15, so that presumes that you still had some secondary school to go. What were your career objectives in those early days? Did you know what you really wanted to do?
I had no idea.
But you ended up in banking later on. What made you select that?
I have a lot of relatives and friends who are in the business, and after San Francisco, I went to New York for university, and New York was a banking sector, and I did some internships for the summer and winter in the securities firms and in the banking business, and I liked the banking sector. It's very fast pace, and you work with a lot of smart people, and the work is very project oriented, and that's how I got into the business.
Also high stress, I would have to say, particularly in New York, given what's been happening over the last year or two. But did you find it stressful yourself, having spent a few years in it?
I think as a young person at that time, I wanted to challenge myself. And in New York, a lot of people were in the financial sector, so I did not find the stress too much to take at that time.
In New York, I think you were telling me off air, you weren't really involved in the gay scene in San Francisco, but you moved to New York, I gather, and when you were about 18 or so. How and in what way did you get involved in the gay scene in New York?
I think university is a place where students would explore their sexuality, and like many of my student schoolmates, I also started thinking about my own sexuality. And in school, there were lesbian and gay organizations and other similar groups. And New York is very diversified, a very culturally diverse place. And it was a good place for me to live, and also to know more about myself.
You spent a few years working in the banking industry in the US, and then I think at a fairly young age, I think you were about 27, you were offered a job back here, or I think you were transferred, was it, back here to Hong Kong. Was that a move that you perhaps were looking forward to, or were you expecting to move elsewhere in the world?
Well, I have been, by that time, I have been working in New York for 4 years, and I got an offer to be relocated to Hong Kong, and I thought that was a good idea because, you know, Hong Kong at that time was about to be handed over to China, and I thought it would be good to come back.
I think gay sex was decriminalized in Hong Kong around about 92, 93, if I recall. Mm-hmm. So 91, was it? When you came back, what was the gay scene like at that stage in Hong Kong? And was there a decent AIDS awareness here, or any decent AIDS education program for the Hong Kong gay and lesbian population?
I think Hong Kong was fortunate in a sense that it is a very cosmopolitan city, and many expats were living here. So the HIV awareness and prevention programs in Hong Kong started quite early by Asian standard. And a lot of the AIDS NGOs in Hong Kong were started by expats at that time living in Hong Kong, and it made people in Hong Kong more aware of the situation at an early years, and that actually was quite helpful. So by the time when I came back, there were already some AIDS NGOs working in Hong Kong already.
What actually got you interested in the whole AIDS issue anyway? Did that start in the US, or was that triggered from here in Hong Kong?
I think it started quite early. HIV-AIDS started in 81, 82, about the same time as I moved to the States. And San Francisco was one of the cities with the earliest cases, along with New York and LA, and so as a teenager, just moved to San Francisco. That made a big impact on me, because that was a time when people did not know much about HIV, and it was still called a gay cancer. A lot of gay men died mysteriously during that time. People did not know how it was spread, and there was certainly no antiretroviral. So and that made a big impact on me, that a lot of people died without dignity, a lot of hatred from religious group, calling the disease, you know, a punishment from God, and there's a lot of stigma associated with it. And one of my high school teachers also died of AIDS. He was one of the earliest cases, and in San Francisco, you would probably imagine that to happen. And So HIV became a very, very personal to me, even at such an early stage.
After you're in Hong Kong, I'm not sure how long it was, you can tell us, but you ultimately started Cheng Foundation. How and why did that come about?
After I moved to Hong Kong, I continued to work for the bank, and I had a lot of opportunities to travel to mainland China. There were a lot of trips that I took to the countryside because we were looking at infrastructure projects like power plants and toll roads. And I was quite shocked that a lot of people that I talked to have never heard of HIV/AIDS. And I became very worried that China would repeat the disaster, as we have seen in the U.S., if people have not even heard of the disease. And that was 13, 14 years ago. That's why we wanted to do something about it. And with a few like-minded people, we founded Cheng Foundation.
And in a nutshell, what were the objectives then, and have they changed?
Our mission is to promote a healthy, equal, and harmonious society. And that mission remained unchanged. Because of HIV/AIDS and because of equal opportunities, we deal a lot with anti-stigma. The society still has a lot of stigma associated with sexual orientation, with HIV/AIDS. So that is still a big goal for us to promote an equal, healthy, and harmonious society.
This is Alan Smales. I'm in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking to Chong Tu, who's the founder and chairperson of Cheng Foundation.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, speaking to Chong To, the founder and chairperson of Cheng Foundation. When you started the foundation, was it just yourself, or you had how many people were involved?
We had three main founders, and some of them, one of them is still involved with our work, and some people have moved on, and then later on we had other people who joined as directors, and we continue rolling. And I think the development of Cheng also can bear witness to the development of civil societies in Hong Kong and mainland China, because we started as a very small group with no paid staff, no office, and no money, and we just had the only fixed asset we had was a fax machine, which was donated, and we held our meetings in people's apartments, and everyone worked as a volunteer. And 10 years later, we became a mid-sized NGO with about 30 paid staff and 9 offices around China. So.
Goodness. Now, you mentioned funding, and I know a little bit about running volunteer organisations and limited funding, but obviously you've grown, and I imagine that the costs of running the organisation now, particularly given the support that you give to so many children, must be fairly significant. Where does the majority of your funding come from these days?
About 20-30% of the budget comes from international organizations such as United Nations and the Hong Kong government, and some public funding. And the remaining came from the private sector, some from corporations and some from individuals.
You've also had some important support from a number of important people. I noticed, even looking around your office, I mean, Clinton Dobell Initiative. I mean, I think you've met Clinton, have you not? What other people at that level have you dealt with during the period of Cheng Foundation?
We are very fortunate to be supported by a lot of people, Bill Clinton has been very supportive to our work, including donating the antiretroviral to the HIV-positive children in China, and also providing some of the other support. I've met with him a few times, and in addition to Bill Clinton, our program has been visited or supported by some other people, such as basketball player Yao Ming and David Ho, who was the inventor of the cocktail treatment and Man of the Year of the Time magazine, and some other celebrities and groups. So,
during this early stage, you're still working in the banking business here in Hong Kong, but you ultimately gave it away. I mean, in the lead up to that, was that a difficult decision for you to have to make? And how did you survive after that for a while?
When I co-founded the Chi Hang Foundation, I was working as a banker. So my ideal situation would be to continue to work in a paid job, and at the same time doing the volunteering part-time for the Chi Hang Foundation. However, about 3-4 years down the road, I realized that the HIV problem is so big that if I continue doing it on a part-time basis, I would not be able to move the Chi Hang Foundation to the next level. So at that time, it wasn't just the lack of financial resources, it was the lack of human resources to further develop the charity. So I decided to take a long sabbatical from my career and began to do this full-time on a no-paid basis. So at that time, I promised my parents that it would be a 3-year break from the professional job. But after that, it just took longer and longer, and things just got more and more to do, and the workload got heavier and heavier, and it's hard to break this.
And do you think you will ever go back?
I'm trying to explore another way, which is to do something on top of the charity, but it could be something like a social enterprise, or it could be something on the side, because I certainly cannot live as a volunteer without an income till I'm 80 or 60, you know. So I need to find a balance.
This is Alan Smales. I'm in Hong Kong speaking with Chung To, founder and chairperson of the Chi Hang Foundation.
Joy 94.9, a little less straight than other radio stations.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Zelen Smales, I'm in Hong Kong speaking to Chung To. Chi Hang Foundation has grown. You mentioned earlier that you started out in Hong Kong, but it's actually now you've got offices spread all over China. Where are you located?
In addition to our headquarters in Hong Kong, we have offices in big cities like Beijing, Shanghai and Guangzhou, and also some rural areas in the central China, with some offices in the villages doing the groundwork.
And presumably got some paid staff in those offices, but what about volunteers? Do you have many volunteers in those sorts of locations as well?
Yeah, like other NGOs, a lot of the work is actually taken care of by volunteers, because as NGOs, just like other NGOs, we lack a lot of resources. So I'm very grateful that we have the support of many volunteers who work very hard for our program, especially our HIV prevention work in the big cities. It's almost largely done by volunteers.
Can we categorize some of the programs? I mean, doing some research, I mean, you've got the Memory Book Project and AIDS Orphan Project, for example. I mean, at the top level, how do you categorize the various things that you're actually involved in?
You can roughly divide our programs into three parts, defined by the target group or target group that we try to serve. One is the HIV/AIDS impacted children, children orphaned by AIDS. And the second group is MSM, men who have sex with other men, including gay men and male sex workers and young male. And the third group is the general public. And within the three groups, we have different programs. For the AIDS orphans, our main program is education and education sponsorship and psychosocial support. And for the MSM, the main program is HIV prevention and education. And for the general public, it is anti-stigma and public awareness raising program.
You deal, from what I understand, with several thousand children that you're supporting, both in terms of living expenses and presumably schooling and all that sort of thing. What happens to those children that lose their parents? I mean, do they get farmed out or adopted out, or what do you try to do with those children in terms of where they get accommodated?
We currently support over 8,000 children whose parents have died of AIDS or HIV positive under our program, which makes us by far the largest non-governmental operation in China focusing on serving the AIDS impacted children. We do not build orphanages and we do not build special schools for these children. Instead, we empower the local community so that they could live with their grandparents and their relatives and be able to go to school. We put them back into the local schools and we sponsor the education and other education-related expenses. And they go to schools with other non-AIDS impacted children to be more integrated into the society.
In terms of that integration, what is the attitudes in general, particularly in the rural areas, of AIDS affected children by their peers in school?
There's still a lot of stigma, but we started dealing with children in high prevalence areas. We are talking about villages with an HIV prevalence of 40 or as much as 60% of the adult population. So half the village adult have died of AIDS or are HIV positive. So when you talk about this kind of infection rate, the stigma is relatively less. So for the primary school students, the fact that they go to schools with other non-AIDS impacted children may not have caused a lot of discrimination. However, when you go to senior high school or university, when the AIDS affected children's population is greatly diluted, there would be certainly be discrimination against the children impacted by AIDS. However, we do not disclose their status. And by that time, they are in school because of our support, but no one is supposed to know.
Very briefly, what's the Chinese government's attitude to your work, and has it changed as you've built up a record in mainland China?
I think HIV/AIDS is still quite a sensitive issue in China, especially in a local level. I think since SARS, the central government has moved beyond the stage of denial. So you see from the central government that they are quite proactively trying to solve the problem, especially in the treatment and care. However, when you go down to the local level, I think there still could be quite mixed. Some local government are more proactive and some are, you know, still very sensitive with regard to the issue. And they are concerned that by exposing the HIV issue, it might hurt the local economy, it might decrease the level of outside investment, it might hurt the image of the that area, the people from that area might not find employment outside, etc. It's very similar to typical response in the early years, even in many other countries.
Alan Spales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking with Chung To from Chi Heng Foundation.
Diversity is Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking to Chung To, who's the founder and chairperson of Chi Heng Foundation. Some of the programs that you run now, one of them is the I think it's called the Memory Book Project, is it, where children can collate some family histories. Tell us, how did that start, and how widely used is it?
When we first started the psychosocial support programs for the AIDS orphans, we realized that they have a lot of trauma. Because they saw their parents dying of AIDS, and most often without proper treatment and medication, so they had been traumatized in many ways, and we tried to do something about it. And then I realized that there is a memory book project in Africa for the AIDS orphans. However, the AIDS the memory book in Africa was for the parents to fill out for the children. So it's more like a will that before they died, they put down something so that the children would remember the parents. However, when we first started or trying to start the memory book project, we were too late, because many of the parents have already died, and the memory book could not be filled up by the parents. So we kind of twisted it around and then asked the children to write the memory books so that they could have something to memorize about their parents, such as asking, you know, what kind of food they liked, what kind of color the parents like, and if you could write a letter to your mom, although your mom has passed away, what would you write, and how would you remember your own mother, in a way to help the children to heal and let them realize that all the parents have died, they are still around, and it's someone not completely gone. So that's how we got started.
And in what form are these collated? That is, are they in pure book form, or are some sort of electronics used in something? I noticed that on your website there's some PDF versions of some samples there, but presumably most people don't have access to computers, so what are they in book form or whatever?
Yes, we've printed the memory book out nicely and asked the children to fill it out. So it was in a hard copy, very colourful book format.
What about some of the other programs and the support that you give to children that have been affected either directly or indirectly through their loss of parents? What sort of stories can you tell us of the difficult problems that some of the children find themselves in when they've lost a parent? Maybe the families have disintegrated or whatever. I mean, there must be some very bad, very sad stories.
Some of the older children not only lost their parents, but some of them realized that their younger siblings also is HIV positive. So they have to deal with HIV in many different ways. Losing their parents, and as an older child, they might have to continue doing the housework, taking care of their younger siblings and going to school, and deal with a lot of stigma. Sometimes even from their own relatives, because in China, a lot of the, especially in a village, when people are less educated, there is a lot of superstition. So when the parents died of AIDS, some relatives or some people would not blame the parents, but blame the children of bringing bad luck to the family, that accusing the children to be the reason why the parents had to die. So some children might face this kind of hatred and from their own relatives, and some of the older children, after the parents died of AIDS, they still have to deal with HIV by taking care of their younger children who found out to be HIV positive. Currently, we have over 300 children who are HIV positive that we are under our program. So you could imagine many of the HIV negative older kids have to be, you know, living with their younger siblings.
Now, what about psychotherapy services? Do you have professionals that provide that, presumably on a volunteer basis, and how many do you have?
We cannot afford to hire a professional psychotherapist, but we do have some art therapists and psychologists working with us on a volunteer basis. In addition to the memory book project, one of our key projects is art therapy. So we encourage the children to do drawings because we believe that the drawings might have some therapeutic impact for them. And during our summer camp activities and in the villages, we do a lot of drawing sessions with the children.
What about Chi-Heng Foundation from here on? Presumably you've got some sort of forward plan and you know vaguely, more than vaguely, where you're going. Where do you see it going over the next, say, 5 years or so?
We, I mentioned, we also run the HIV prevention program focusing on gay men and male sex workers and young male. And we currently work in six Chinese cities. And each city we have a team of volunteers doing the community outreach in gay venues and parks and saunas and toilets. And we hope to expand it to more cities and also to do it in more in depth. And another thing we want to do more is volunteer testing. We have done it in some cities, but I think there's still a lot to be done. In the program for children with HIV, we hope to a lot of the children are growing up. They are no longer in school, so we hope to provide more vocational training and job placement to them and start some social enterprise so that we could maximize their group, the children's talents.
And what about staff growth? I mean, that inevitably must grow as well, and presumably you need to increase your volunteer base as well. That must be an ongoing stress as well.
Yes, I think in China there's always an issue of finding people, capable people to work in the NGO sector. We cannot compete with the private sector on salary, on career prospect, so finding good people is always difficult. However, there is a very encouraging development. We currently hire seven children who used to be supported by us in the AIDS Orphan Program. They are university students who have graduated from university and volunteered to come back and work for us as a paid staff. So we are very delighted to see the transformation of these young people impacted by AIDS from a person being helped to now a person who can help others. So we hope that our growth could also count on people who have previously been supported by us.
And finally, for people who want to read a little bit more about Chiheng Foundation, or even if they want to donate, I guess your website is the best place to go. What's the website that people should go to?
You can do three things. One is the website, the other is YouTube, and the third is PayPal. The website, the main website, is www.chihengfoundation.com. Chiheng spells as C-H-I and then H-E-N-G, and foundation.com, that is the as one word. And the YouTube, if you search under YouTube as Chiheng Foundation, you can see some of the video clippings of the art therapy, of our AIDS prevention work in many different video clips. And for PayPal, people can donate by Visa card, by PayPal as well.
Wonderful. Thanks very much, Chiheng, for taking time and having this chat. I really appreciate it. I've been speaking to Chiheng To, who's the founder and chairperson of Chiheng Foundation here in Hong Kong. Thanks very much, Chiheng.
Thank you, Alan.
That's Orange Ribbon for another week. My thanks to Chiheng To, who made time for me in his always very busy schedule to spend an hour with me in his Sheung Wan office in Hong Kong 3 weeks ago in order to record tonight's interview. If you'd like to know more about Chiheng Foundation and its activities, or to even to support the amazing work they can do, that they do, you can go to chihengfoundation.com, or as Chiheng just mentioned, search on YouTube for Chiheng Foundation. Coming up next on Joy is Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining me on Orange Ribbon tonight, and thanks to Aline pushing the buttons. Orange Ribbon will be back again at the same time, 7 o'clock next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks also to Nick, who's been helping out on reception tonight. I'm Alan Smales. From me, for now, bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.